saying Congress is broken and electing more career politicians won't fix it, St. John's County Commissioner Bill McClure is looking for your vote in next week's GOP congressional primary. He's here in studio right now to take your calls. And good Monday morning, live from Studio 5. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9. Thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross. We're always live at 9. Make sure to subscribe to our podcast on iTunes and the WJCT app. And you can watch the show now, too, with video on demand at our partner, TVJax.com. Just ahead, Bill McClure on his campaign for Congress. Get on the line now at 549-2937. Then later, Straight Allies shares the story of Jacksonville's Denise Iandoli, plus Culpepper on the Jags preseason tune-up. All of that ahead. But first this hour, St. John's County Commissioner Bill McClure is part of the crowded field of Republicans running in Florida's 4th Congressional District, all seeking to replace the retiring congressman from this area, Ander Crenshaw. With early voting now underway in the August 30th primary, McClure joins us here in studio with more about his campaign and takes your calls. Bill McClure, a pleasure. Good morning.
Good morning, Melissa.
Thanks for being with us. We're already getting your calls for St. John's County Commissioner Bill McClure. What are your thoughts and questions about this race for Congress? Get on the line right now at 549-2937. That's 549-2937. Or go online to wjctnews.org/firstcoastconnect. Email, tweet us, or weigh in on our Facebook page. And so you've been on the St. John's County Commission for about 4 years, decided to leap into the fray in this crowded Republican primary. What is animating your campaign for Congress?
Well, first of all, we have had a retiring congressman that I love and respect. And so he has been very powerful in Congress. So we need a powerful voice for Northeast Florida. And the second thing is that they redistrict. So our actual geographic area now encompasses St. John's County, Duval County, and Nassau County. And we went to an R plus 22 seat, so a very conservative Republican seat. And so I decided that that was an opportunity for me to take, and I have been very successful since 2012 at holding a hard fiscal conservative line and seeing immediate results in 4 years in St. John's County. So I decided to go ahead and put my hat in the race.
In the recent debate, you fielded some questions about allegations that you've been involved with a business called MediD that some have called a pill mill. Mm-hmm. Florida Attorney General Pam Bondi executed search warrants on these facilities 2 years ago, and her office says that the criminal investigation is still active. What would you say to those just learning about that aspect of your background that might be concerned about voting for you?
Yeah, well, that was in 2004. And some of the things that they don't publish is, you know, it was a minority investor in a mental health clinic that supported over 80,000 patient visits with one complaint. And the one complaint came from a disgruntled employee. It was a mental health clinic that prescribed medication from amoxicillin to Zoloft or Wellbutrin for depression, handled patients for PTSD, veterans for PTSD. So the fact that somebody would call it a pill mill, they don't actually understand that in a mental health clinic, that's it. The worst thing you get is maybe a Xanax or a lorazepam to handle your panic attacks.
So you deny that allegation that it was a pill mill?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, just looking at the prescription history, the actual allegations have nothing to do with the fact that they're calling it. That's just the public being uninformed.
Okay. And what would you say, though, to those who are really Republicans that will look at a list of seven names, and some have higher name recognition than others? You're known in St. John's County, of course. You sit on the commission. But as you try to get your message out to a wider audience, what is your qualification to hold this seat above all the competitors? For example, Lake Ray, former state representative, he received the Times Union endorsement over former Sheriff John Rutherford, who has the highest name recognition, mainly because he's seen as being the one most able to get legislation through the process. So why would you be a better choice than those that have already had this kind of experience?
Good question. And first of all, when you're a county commissioner, you're one of five. And so when I go to, we can make legislative decisions every second Tuesday at 9. So we encourage everybody to come. So we make legislative decisions. Second thing is I sit on the Florida Association of Counties and the National Association of Counties legislative as their legislative chair. And what that means is we go and we talk to the state of Florida. We talk to the reps. For example, we said, we don't agree with Common Core. Representative Ray voted for that. We said that should be a district issue. This shouldn't be a national issue. Really shouldn't. We shouldn't be trying to push an agenda down onto to local children. In fact, I led the coalition of Florida Association of Counties to sue the state twice. Number one, on Medicaid cost sharing, they were sending us bills for people who were homeless, and our taxpayers had to pay that. That saved them more than $1 million. And second thing was juvenile justice. We sued and won successfully over their cost sharing. They're supposed to pay a certain amount, and then they sent us a bill that was millions of dollars overbilling us. And so I've been able to do that. And then on the federal level, on the flood insurance program, you know, in the Northeast Florida, we have over 50,000 homeowners who are required to have flood insurance. At the federal level, they said, hey, we're broke. We want to double the premiums. So my team, myself and about six others flew up. Other county commissioners from other states were elected, and like myself, to go to Washington and actually sit before their panel and say, hey, we can't absorb a double in those fees. So we got them to put a 5% cap if you're a resident, and you homestead your home.
You've campaigned on a message that career politicians are part of an irrefutably broken process in Washington. How would you be different?
Yes. Well, here's what happened. Special interest money. I think that so much money has gotten into politics, and it's on either side of an issue. So it can be whether or not you're talking about environmental regulations. Should there be less environmental regulations and more privatization of an electric utility like JEA? Or should we talk about other issues like it's okay, we're dumping less carcinogens into the river and it'll be clean and the natural environment will take care of it. So, but there's big money on both sides. That's what's happened really in the last 12 years in Congress, is there's been so much money on both sides, and that forms a divisive wedge. I've self-funded my campaign, and as well as I will decline the federal pension. So I think I'm going to go there, and I get elected every 2 years. So remember, it's every 2 years, and I'll not take a federal pension.
What would you see as the biggest priorities for this congressional district?
Certainly military. Military affairs. We have about 50,000 people in addition to the military that support this area in Northeast Florida, from Mayport, NAS Jack, Cecil Field, down in St. Augustine and Northrop Grumman. Lots of defense contractors coming into this area as well. That would be a huge issue. Transportation, we're a transportation hub as well, and that would be huge. And I sit on the Transportation Committee for the National Association of Counties.
Let's go to your calls now for St. John's County Commissioner Bill McClure, part of a crowded field of Republican candidates seeking your vote in the August 30th GOP primary, with early voting underway right now. The winner of this primary will face the only Democrat on the ballot, Dave Bruderle, in November. What are your thoughts? What are your questions? Let's go to the phones right now at 549-2937. Calls from all over town. Jan in Mandarin. Hi, Jan. Go ahead and turn your radio down and go ahead.
Hi.
Hey.
I am calling because, you know, you keep hearing even on the national level that word rigged. And I've never really been involved much in politics before, but like this weekend, driving around town, I saw signs that were smashed into the ground. I would drive by and see a sign for someone, and 30 minutes later come by, and it would be gone. And then on the poll calls, only two names mentioned. You're saying, you know, it's a whole list of people that are running for this position, and yet when they call you, they only mention two. So I want to know how Mr. McClure feels about what is going on and like with the straw polls and all of that.
Okay, sure.
How the decisions are being made.
Yeah, thanks, Jan. And yeah, and there was a flap over how that went down and who got picked. And what about that?
Well, two things she brings up. One is a straw poll. A straw poll is whoever shows up at a particular event and then fills out a ballot. What I've seen during this particular process is people show up with teams and teams of people to potentially win and then put out a news release. Hey, I came in first, or I came in second, or whatever it is. you know, our team, we don't do that. We walk in and everything is fair. As far as the signs, it is unfortunate that that's happened. I can tell you, you know, each candidate probably spends close to $20,000 in signs. Mm-hmm. And for some reason, you know, they all disappear. And our campaign is no different. We'll put
You've
out
had signs stolen?
Oh, absolutely. Completely. Mm-hmm. We probably had $5,000 worth of signs completely stolen. Or even you can see tire tracks that go and mm-hmm. run them over. So, you know, it is, it's the I guess, politics. It's a little different in Duval County. Nassau County, the signs are still there. St. John's County, the signs are still there. Just in Duval County, we seem to have
an issue. It's dirty Duval.
Dirty Duval. Okay. I don't know.
All right. 549-2937. Dave and Fernandina got a Nassau County caller on the line. Hi, Dave. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
My question is simply this. We have an actual existential threat to this country, and it's climate change caused by human activity. Climatologists at NASA have already established the link between carbon dioxide and other greenhouse gas emissions with climate change. We've seen the effects taking place here in Northeast Florida. What steps would you plan to take, or what positions would you take to provide safety for those of us that live in low-lying areas that are going to be affected by the effects of climate change?
Thanks, Dave. We're getting emails from listeners asking that same question as well. So what about that? Bill McClure.
Sure. Well, first of all, we have to follow the science. I've had the opportunity to go all around the world. And if you look at us on a global scale, we're doing great. If you go anywhere into a third world country, or you go to where there's factories, you go to the south of the border, into Mexico, into South America, and over into Europe, we are much better here. I mean, amazing.
Better how?
If you look at the factory, the outputs of the factory, the huge smoke, the emissions, you'll see waste discharge from their particular electric facilities that are going right into their tributaries. That is almost raw sewage. You find all kinds of stuff that's going. We have so many EPA regulations right now here. We're doing such a great job in terms of the low-lying areas and maybe sea level rise. I think the last science that I've actually looked at it that said it's actually gone up a foot. So we've seen it a foot, I think, since 1986. So the effect is there. It's happening. We need to make some changes with the building code, particularly in Florida, in the Northeast Florida. Building code is to build the base foot elevation for building. You need to rise that up. The builders are fighting that, and because there's a cost mm-hmm. associated with it. And I'm saying, hey, we need to, that's an example of what we need to do. We need to raise our standards to make sure that we, otherwise everybody would have to have flood insurance. They would get flooding. All of that would happen.
How would you handle the tension between being part of the Republican caucus in D.C. and at the same time representing constituents who are starting to show a bipartisan concern about sea level rise here in Florida, which is the most vulnerable state in the nation, except maybe Hawaii, when it comes to this issue? Because we've seen a strong partisan split on this issue on Capitol Hill. How would you look at legislation designed to curb emissions, for example, following on the Paris Accord, looking at how to address this issue globally? The U.S., particularly the Republican caucus in Washington, is seen as an outlier in terms of getting on the same page as the rest of the world when it comes to the brass tacks of how we go about curbing emissions.
Well, you know, we do have regulations in place between now and 2022. So every car manufacturer has to meet emission, and there's been huge penalties. I think VW came down hard on VW for cheating on their emissions testing for automobiles, and we have strict emissions laws now. The problem is, people aren't following them. So again, in terms of the United States on a global level, we're one of the most strict, we have companies that are actually not following the law, but there's less enforcement. Only VW happened to be an international company that everybody hears about, but we need to make sure that that's carried all the way down to the local level.
And how would you, as a Republican representing a coastal area, would you defy your caucus, say, on these issues? Because in general, the Republicans have voted one way, the Democrats another way, but Republicans in coastal communities are starting to depart from the party line on this issue, particularly when they're dealing with the real world impacts of it.
Well, remember, I'm self-funded, so money can't buy you a vote. And somebody coming in waving a fact I'm going to make a contribution to your campaign doesn't work with me. That's been the problem in politics, and that's forcing the divided line. I cannot be bought, so I'm going to look at sound logic, look at science, look at logic, and vote that the way. And then I'm going to advocate that position.
And lots of calls for St. John's County Commissioner Bill McClure, one of seven Republicans in the GOP primary for the CD4 congressional seat. Early voting is underway right now. The primary is August 30th, and we have lots of calls at 549-2937. Savannah in St. Augustine. Hi, Savannah. How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
Doing well, thanks.
Awesome. So I just have a question. I know that the commissioner has talked a lot about his conservative values, which is important to me as a voter. But I was just wondering, if you're elected into Congress, how will you work with people across the aisle to make sure that decisions are made in a timely fashion without compensating and losing what you stand for?
Thank you for that.
Good question. It sounds like a young caller, which is good. You know, we do have family values, and you know, America has been fractured in general. You know, in all honesty, I'm divorced myself, so remarried, two boys and two girls. That's wonderful. So putting back the family unit has been very important to me, and I want to make sure that we all lead by example. As a congressman, we have to lead by example, and that's part of your family values, how we live our life, what we choose to do. St. John's County, we recently said no to allowing gambling to come in there, and that's something that we just said, this is a part of our value system in St. John's County that we decided to know. If you want to go somewhere else and go gamble, then go there and gamble. But as far as working across the aisle, it's, again, based on logic and sound ideology.
Barbara is in Arlington. Hi, Barbara. What are your thoughts?
Hello.
Hi. Good morning, Barbara.
Hi. Hello?
Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, yes. I had a question for Mr. McClure. I was wondering, where does he stand on the half-cent sales tax plan?
Okay, sure. That is also on the ballot, the proposal to resolve the city's pension issues. Where are you on that?
Well, I've been the only one to publicly come out and say that I'm not in support of that particular tax. That's a half a cent part of a sales tax. According to Florida statutes, that's supposed to be spent for infrastructure, roads, bridges, things like that. They went around the legislature to say we can use this for 1,700 of our pensioners. We want to help fix a bad contract which guaranteed a rate of return. I don't get a guaranteed rate of return. You probably don't either from your investment advisor. The fact of the matter is it's going to really only benefit 1,700 people. And the way that taxes are supposed to work is they're supposed to be equal to all. So it's perhaps unconstitutional, I think so. And if I took that mentality and I said, hey, I'm for this, this really a bailout, a pensioner bailout, which is what it is, and I go to Washington, we're in $19 trillion in debt. So why wouldn't I turn around and tell everybody that, okay, let's go ahead and write a check for $86,542, but I'll finance it for you over 10 years. That'll be fine, or over 30 years, but we're going to collect those money. I can't take that attitude with me to Washington.
How would you solve the pension situation then?
Actually, I've been involved in collective bargaining in the healthcare field many times. It's a tough thing to do, but we've always been able to fix it. One of the things that I would do is look at the fact that they're in about $2.7 billion in deficit funding right now. I would go to all the pensioners and ask them, say, look, you've got maybe 12 years left and you're going to be guaranteed $1 million after 12 years, but you're going to get shot at, or, you know, if you're a JSO officer, would you maybe take cash up front, let's say $600,000 now, but stay with us because we're going to pay you by giving you maybe a $10,000 per year per raise, and because I want you to stay on with it. I don't want you to take the money and then leave. So there has to be that continued 12 years of service, if you will. But I have done a poll, And 100%, I've probably talked to 75 police officers, and 100% have said, I'd rather take the money now than give me the promise in 12 years.
But you wouldn't be dealing with the rank and file. You'd be dealing with the union representative, right? Look at all the years and years of intractable negotiations that have produced nothing. And what's your response to the mayor saying this is really the only solvable way to go about this? Meanwhile, others are saying, actually, no, I don't like this. I think we need to raise property taxes to start attacking the debt now. Where are you on that?
I'm not for property tax, raising property tax. The fact of the matter is you don't get everybody. And it's a part of the problem with regular income tax. Not everybody pays property tax. You could say not everybody pays as well. We've got, and then the other thing with property tax is, remember, the state legislature comes in at any point in time and says, we're going to give you another exemption. So if you're a veteran, you have an exemption. A senior citizen, another exemption. Your homestead exemption. So now you could be at $100,000 in exemptions on a home that's only worth $200,000. And so the state can cut that revenue for you. So that is always a bad idea. If you're trying to plug a revenue hole, and the state can undercut you, bad idea.
So you would solve it by simply renegotiating with police, fire, and public employees.
It's done every single – that's what collective bargaining is. You say, this is all the money we have. Look at Hostess. They just had to shut down their operations because the union said, we want more – better money. We want more money. The company said, we don't have the money, and we can't do it. And that was in an impasse, and the company no longer exists. That's what happens sometimes.
Let's take one more call for Bill McClure. It's Stephen in Mandarin. Hi, Stephen. Thanks for holding. You're on the air.
Hey, good morning. I'm actually kind of glad to hear someone talk about a little bit of deficit spending. What are you going to do on a federal level with deficit spending and cutting? We all seem to hear all the wonderful things that we're going to have in the near future, post-presidential election and whatnot, but no one's talking about the nitty-gritty. We need to remove either branches or large deficit spending. When is it going to happen? Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Stephen.
Great question. Specifics are limiting the size of government, so we want to reduce the Department of Education, Department of Housing and Urban Development, Department of the Treasury. We want to audit the Fed.
How are you going to do that? I mean, that's something you hear a lot in Republican primaries. We're going to cut the... Yeah, Rick Perry, when he ran for president, said the same thing. How is that even realistically accomplished, though?
It's only accomplished if you change the rules. Right now, the rules are that if you can't agree, two parties can't agree, the spending continues plus an increase. So every single department gets, let's say, $100 million. And that's up to those bureaucrats to figure out how they're going to spend that. And then the only person who can change that is the president through executive orders. And that's exactly what's happened. We want you to spend this money in this particular way for this particular housing and urban development or whatever it is. So the way that we have to do is we have to change the rules and go to, if it's a balanced budget amendment that includes no increasing taxes to balance the budget, it really needs to go to spending. If you can't make a decision, it needs to say spending minus, let's say, 5% or spending minus 10%. And that's really what a sequester is, where it just takes a cut off of everybody. But that's everything, military spending, every single department.
You know what? I said we were done taking calls, but I'm going to take this one last call because it appears that former mayor and current city councilman Tommy Hazzuri is on the line.
Sure.
Tommy Hazzuri, good morning. How are you?
Good morning.
Good morning, Melissa. How are you doing?
I'm well. Thanks for
just
calling.
Just a question.
Sure.
Question to your guest. Just how are you doing? Good luck. But
thank you.
Let me just straighten a few things out for you because I know you don't live in Jacksonville, and I'm not sure if you really understand what this half-cent tax is really about. You know, it doesn't cut. We didn't go around the legislature. The mayor went to the legislature, and they all agreed that there was but one way to get a half-cent tax. You cannot tax locally, nor can you do direct millage just for retirement of the pension plan. This plan that the mayor's proposing, the half-cent referendum, only goes to those who are already under the plan, who have, and that's the ones that we've already, I don't know how to explain it better to you, but I'm not sure if you really understand. It's just those who've already technically are under contract. You cannot change your contract. You can't go back and negotiate that contract because they're locked in. It's for all future retirees. We'll have up to three new plans. all better plans for the taxpayers. The other $2.8 billion goes toward retiring that over the next 20 and 30 years. It frees up money for Duval County to do what St. Augustine is doing and what St. John's County is doing, trying to make it a better life for everyone.
All right. So making all those points, Tommy Azzurri, let me ask you, and then I know Bill wants to respond. You said that a millage rate increase is not a possibility. Right now did a 1 mil increase in the property tax rate, that's $50 million beginning next year. So why is that for those that like that option better, why is that not even being considered? Should this vote fail?
Well, there's not, should it fail, you don't have many options left. There's only two options. It's Hobson's choice, either the half-cent sales tax or millage. You cannot dedicate millage to retirement plans like the police and fire, general employees, or the corrections. Every council person that comes in can change that millage, do what they want to. This locks in. This half-cent only can go toward that. I like the idea of millage. Nobody would pay for that. Nobody would support that.
Okay.
Because it impacts just the property owner.
And let me give Mr. McClure a chance to answer you real quick, Tommy, because we are running a little tight on time.
Okay.
But that's former mayor, former school board member, current city council member Tommy Azzurri calling in, and former legislator. Sorry, you've done so many things. I sometimes forget.
If I was a Republican, I could run in that seat.
Tommy Azzurri calling the show, and thank you for doing so. Bill McClure.
Thank you.
Last words.
Sure. Thank you for your service, Tommy. I appreciate your service to this area. So thank you. As far as putting the new plans, you're still a charter county. You can do what you want to do. You don't have to act under the legislature. But I would move all the retirees to the Florida retirement system, which is what most of the counties have, the Florida retirement system. Then they can choose to have their own investments in a 401k. That's the way that I would do is draw a hard line in the sand. And then I would go back and negotiate, because at the end of the day, who guaranteed 8% over a number of years? And Tom, I appreciate his position, but he's saying the taxpayers guaranteed it. That's his position. The taxpayers guaranteed an 8% investment return. The other thing is, if you don't do anything between now and 2030, the pension liability grows to more than $6 billion. So right now it's 2.7. How are you going to handle that? If you don't allocate, if you're going to really free up funds, then that means you're not allocating any money. Then we figure out how are you going to do that?
Well, I appreciate you being on the program today. Thanks for sharing your thoughts with our listeners.
Thank you. Thank you for having me, Melissa.
He's St. John's County Commissioner Bill McClure, one of seven Republicans on the ballot in the CD4 congressional race. That primary is August 30th. Early voting underway now. The winner of the primary will face Democrat David Bruderle in November. Get out and vote now. Candidate profiles and more, meanwhile, at WJCTnews.org. And much more still ahead later, Cole Pepper as the Jags continue their preseason tune-up. But up next, Straight Allies with the story of Denise Iandoli. Back in a moment.
On the next Fresh Air, fixing our aging, unstable electric grid.
The greatest threat to the electric grid right now in the U.S. is actually foliage.
That is, trees and vines that can knock wires out of commission. We'll talk with Gretchen Bakke, author of The Grid, who says solutions are as much about financial relationships, political interests, and cultural patterns as they are about technology. Join us.
Weekdays at noon on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world.
Hi. I'm Steve Woodard, the Director of Emergency Preparedness for the City of Jacksonville. Knowing your evacuation zone is critical to your safety. Listen to emergency management for important evacuation information. Stay informed at jacksready.com and tune to 89.9, the designated emergency broadcaster for Northeast Florida.
This segment is brought to you by Colo CSX Data Center Hosting Solutions.
As we celebrate a musical legacy that began more than a century ago. Blues Horizon, for the best in classic and modern blues, every Monday night at 11 p.m., only on 89.9 FM.
Unlock your newest member benefit. Over 1,000 episodes of your favorite PBS shows. American Masters. Antiques Roadshow. Nature. Nova. Masterpiece. Watch the best of PBS anytime, anywhere. Become a member. Sign in and start streaming today.
WJCT.org/passport.
Welcome back. Well, the local advocacy group We Are Straight Allies is focusing right now on the faith, corporate, African-American, and transgender communities as it works towards passage of both statewide legislation and a comprehensive human rights ordinance in Jacksonville. Their latest video features local resident Denise Iandoli. She's a parent, aunt, sister, small business owner, and transgender woman who lives here in town, and she joins us now to share her story. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you, Melissa.
Thanks so much for being with us. So you were born John Iandoli.
Yes.
Raised in a very strict Italian Catholic family. Where was that?
New York City.
In New York City. So from the time you were little, you've told Straight Allies you knew that you were different. Can you tell us a little bit about your childhood?
Well, there was always something. You know, I felt like it was almost like a thorn in my side. And, you know, as I grew up and approached puberty, that became more apparent.
In what way?
Well, just with dating, you know, being with women, you know, there were just issues. And, you know, I just had trouble with that.
But you went ahead and married a woman and had twin girls.
Yes.
And raised two daughters.
Yes.
At what point did you realize this isn't who I am, and that you couldn't go on identifying and presenting yourself to the world as a man?
Well, during the marriage, you know, because I struggled with intimacy. You know, I remained a virgin all the way through school, and that posed issues. And actually, it wasn't until I was 20 that I had my first experience. You know, and then as things went along, I just became very, very withdrawn. You know, it was like I was born without that instruction. You know, and, you know, it was torment, and it was very hard on my wife. You know, it was just hard, you know. And then eventually, as the marriage started to crumple, you know, I finally realized. And it was actually in one of the arguments that we were having where, you know, she, you know, accused me, well, you know, you're not a man. And then that was when it hit home.
What did you do then?
Well, it actually was freeing because I knew what the issue was. Before that, I didn't.
What year was this?
Say around 1990.
So that's going back some ways.
Yes.
And there was much less awareness back then about these issues.
Yes, there wasn't, there wasn't really much information, you know, on TV or talk shows. You know, you didn't have the internet net to go, but I just knew that it was something that I had to do.
So what did you do? How did you go about the process of transitioning?
Well, I called my parents, you know, and explained to them what was going on. And that was very hard for them. But the one thing I had on my side was that my parents always loved me. And I knew there wasn't anything that I couldn't discuss with them. Mm-hmm. And they were very traditional. They really didn't know what to do. And then eventually they spoke to people within their community, within their church. And they were put in touch with the Gender Identity Association right here in Jacksonville.
Oh, really?
Yes, yes. They wrote them a nice letter. They got a nice response. I got a letter, and they invited me to come in.
Is that how you ended up here in Jacksonville?
Yes.
And also, and what was the name of that organization?
Gender Identity Association.
And are they still active in this city?
No, the doctor has since retired.
But that's what brought you to the First Coast.
Yes.
Okay. And so it can be a long process of transitioning. Was it that way for you?
Yes. And there are many aspects to it, not just the medical aspect. There's also the social aspect, and also getting your documentation in order. So you're really dealing on three fronts to complete the process.
And what would you say to those listening to you now who are really, frankly, just becoming acquainted with the transgender community and don't really understand your journey, and in some cases might not approve of it. When you compare your life today as to how it was then, what's the difference for you? And what would you want to say to folks listening who are trying to understand Denise?
Well, I would tell them they don't have to fear a trans person. You know, because other than the transition that occurred, you know, I'm really very traditional. Always been a hard worker. I actually started my housekeeping business, Denise's Housekeeping, while I was in the middle of that transition. You know, and that business has been a success, you know, for the past 25 years. And more recently, I also have my Florida real estate sales associate license, mm-hmm. Which also requires that you pass a federal background check and you are fingerprinted. And I've always been positive in this community. You know, there haven't been any issues. The people that I work for trust me with their house keys, their alarm codes, their gate codes.
What would you say to those who've heard your story of success in business and would argue, well, then we don't need to update the city's human rights ordinance to protect transgender people and LGB people from discrimination because there's no need for these types of protections?
Actually, there is, because part of that experience was also the taunting, the bullying, the rejection. And, you know, it's like a psychological beatdown is what most transgender people experience. And that does affect you. There are long-term effects to that. There is over a 40% suicide rate amongst transgender people. You know, so it is very, you know, very hard, you know, and you really have to be focused, you know, in order just to survive that.
Have you experienced discrimination in housing and a job interview in terms of being served in a restaurant? Or those are some of the most common types of instances that people from the LGBT community testified to when they appeared before the city council?
Not in those situations. But early in my transition, I did join a fundamentalist church, you know, not knowing any better, Trinity Baptist in Marietta, Florida. And yes, issues did come up. You know, not at first. I was actually a good member of that church, tithing. I was there for quite some time until I went in for my surgery. And one of the nurses there was actually a member of the church. Made copies of my medical records, brought those back to the minister. So after I had recovered enough, you know, to return, my roommates were also members of that church. And the single minister, Michael Hamm, was a neighbor. And his wife came over and said, Michael would like to speak with you. And I went over, had no idea what we were going to be talking about, but he had a piece of paper in his hand. It was a release form to release the church of any responsibility if anything was to happen to me if I returned to the church. And he also told me, excuse me, you know, don't bother denying it, Denise, because, you know, a nurse told us and we have the documentation. And from that point, they scheduled a meeting at the church. And I sat in front of Michael Hamm, Tom Messer, and Mr. Willinger, you know, where I was basically invited to find another church, and not to mention that I was ever a member of that church.
So you got kicked out of that church?
Yes.
And so the faith community has certainly been very vocal in this city about this issue, pro and con. What would be your final thoughts to those that are following this ongoing discussion about the human rights ordinance?
Well, I think it's very important, you know, especially for young transgender individuals, especially in school age. I can't imagine how hard that is for them. And they really do need protection, because the threats are not coming from the transgender community. The threats are coming from the community itself towards transgender people. And it's just because they don't understand us. And that's why, for the most part, I've lived secretly, you know, in the community. You know, I don't advertise that. It's always been on a need-to-know basis. Mm-hmm.
Well, we appreciate you going public with our listeners and sharing
your
story. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you, Melissa.
Denise Iandoli is a transgender woman and parent and business owner here in Jacksonville, and she's the subject of the latest video released by the local advocacy group, We Are Straight Allies. And we'll be right back.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, the U.S. will phase out the use of private prisons to incarcerate federal inmates. New findings by the Department of Justice conclude private facilities are less safe and offer few cost advantages. Implications of the phase out and what it could mean for America's prison system. Weekday mornings at 10 on 89.9.
Hi. I'm Steve Woodard, the Director of Emergency Preparedness for the City of Jacksonville. Knowing your evacuation zone is critical to your safety. Listen to emergency management for important evacuation information. Stay informed at jacksready.com and tune to 89.9, the designated emergency broadcaster for Northeast Florida.
This segment is brought to you by Colo CSX Data Center Hosting Solutions.
The idea came from a ridiculous painting in a pub. Composer Carl Nielsen was enjoying a beer, and he saw a funny picture about the four types of human character. That silly painting inspired his Symphony No. 2. We'll hear it from a recent concert in Estonia on the next performance today from APM.
Weeknights at 7 on 89.9 WJCT.
Welcome back. Well, lately, our occasional commentator, Jay Solomon, has been waking up in the early morning thinking about the emperor's new clothes. He tells us why in this edition of With All Due Respect.
At first, I thought I might be suffering from presidential election toxicity, but further consideration identifies another ballot item, the sales tax referendum to pay down our city's $2.8 billion pension debt. Seems most every VIP around supports it. I've heard interviews with Mayor Curry and pondered letters, op-eds, and columnists in the Times Union, plus a pile of in-depth articles. Still, I gotta say, it troubles me. Certainly the mayor is sincere, and obviously the pension issue must be addressed. My problem is, it leaves too many balls in the air, and if they hit the floor, everything else will hit the fan. Mr. Curry is an honors graduate in accounting and co-founded a successful company that, among other services, provides finance and accounting expertise, and he insists his plan is the only solution. But I'm uncomfortable. While running for mayor, he said in a TU profile, he doesn't support raising taxes or increasing debt to fix the pension, and that former Mayor Alvin Brown's pension proposal was the same as paying your mortgage with your credit card, creating $240 million in new debt. I'm open, Curry then said, to looking at other funding sources, provided they do not further burden taxpayers or increase borrowing. Well, the Curry half-cent sales tax to begin in 2031, replacing the Better Jacksonville Plan half-cent sales tax, would not raise taxes per se, but it is a new tax to be used to offset pension payments, providing up to an estimated $68 million a year to address current city needs. Despite his pledge to not further burden taxpayers, however, the deferred payments will extend the payback of the pension through 2049 at a cost of some $1.5 billion. Given things said in campaigns don't always come to pass, but this is an inheritance our offspring will not appreciate or deserve if we don't have the will to deal with it now. Remember those balls hanging in the air I mentioned? Who among us predicted game changers like September 11th, the Great Recession, or the collapsing into the river of the city block behind the old city hall? These examples all happened within the last 15 years. This pension plan goes out more than twice that long. So in the future, that dredging of the St. John's to get bigger ships into our port, that's going to be paid for how? Scientists say rising seawater will cover about 25% of Naval Station Mayport around the time the pension sales tax expires, but sea rise won't wait till then or affect only Mayport. The point is, we can't know what we don't know, but we do know that our grandkids will still be paying this bill while new imperatives arise. Finding a way to do this now, perhaps combining the sales tax with another tax source, facilitates controlling the present while addressing needs throughout the city and building a sound foundation to prepare for unknown future needs without constricting debt. With all due respect, I'm Jay Solomon.
Jay Solomon is a retired broadcast executive and WJCT volunteer. Publish your favorite Instagram photo this week with the hashtag #ILoveWJCT, and we'll include it in our First Read newsletter this Friday. This week's theme, National Radio Day. Show us a photo of your favorite radio. We will pick the winner in our First Read newsletter. Subscribe for that at WJCTnews.org. And finally this hour, the Jaguars' first team looked very good in their second preseason tune-up. I'm a pepper, he's a pepper, she's a pepper, we're a pepper. Wouldn't you like to be a pepper too? With more on that, the wrap-up from Rio and the rest of the weekend's sports, Cole Pepper is here this Monday. Good morning.
Good morning, Melissa. Yeah, the Jaguars lost to the Buccaneers, but who cares about preseason final scores, right? Certainly the performance of Blake Bortles jumps out at you. He was just terrific. I talked to him after the game. One of the things he mentioned was that he's feeling more decisive in the second year in the offense, and you can see it, and he's taking those next steps. Again,
he's growing, he's developing.
He's getting better. You want to see that improvement. He had a very good year statistically last year, but there were some things that if he's going to be that franchise quarterback, he's got to improve on. He's starting to show signs of that in the preseason, so real positive there. One of the other positives was the play of the offensive line, both in the running game and in terms of pass protection. Luke Jokel looks like he's taking a step forward. Now, again, it's too early to say for certain if he's the answer there, but he has gotten better. That offensive line is getting better. Remember, they gave up over 50 sacks last year of Bortles, so they can't do that again if you want to have that kind of performance. The running game was good. Both T.J. Yeldon and Chris Ivory in particular looked good, and the defense forced a couple of turnovers. There were a ton of penalties. I mean, it was a laundry fest out there with the penalty flags flying everywhere. They've got to clean that up. But if that's what you're working on the preseason, that's certainly a good sign.
Sure.
The most important preseason game of the year comes up Sunday at home against Cincinnati, a nationally televised preseason
game. That's the
team
I grew up with, the Bungles. I mean, the Bengals.
Yeah, and I think they're probably closer to Bengals than Bungles right now. believe me.
Well, we'll see. Yeah, we'll see, I guess. Yeah. Okay, speaking of football, you've got the preseason top 25, including three local Florida universities.
Yeah, with Alabama on top and Clemson second, Oklahoma third. Florida State came in at number four, and it really shows that their season, if they take care of business, really boils down to their matchup against Clemson. The winner of that one very well may be going on to play in the national championship semifinals. Then Georgia's in at 18, new coach Kirby Smart, still questions about the quarterback situation, but that shows the depth of talent they have at Georgia. And Florida in at number 25. I think it's interesting. There, you know, a lot of question marks about that team, but I think this really speaks to what people think about the job that Jim McElwain has done so far since taking over as the head coach there. The SEC, by the way, has six teams in the top 25 and four in the top 11.
And it's that time of year again. Okay, let's talk about the wrap-up down in Rio, the final medal count, U.S. with 46 Olympic gold medals.
Yeah, that's 19 more than second place. Yes, we've made America great again.
Yes.
Second place, Great Britain, 19 medals, gold medals behind. And in terms of total medals won, 121, that's 51 better than second place China. And somebody said, well, what does it mean if you win the most medals? And obviously I say, because that means we're the best.
Of course.
And there are a myriad of reasons. Not necessarily always the most significant storylines coming with winning medals, but a lot of times you can follow that. Certainly the medal haul finished off for the U.S. with the win in men's basketball.
And by the way, why do they always bite the medals when they get their photos taken?
I think
that's a tradition that they, and there's some weird reason why it started.
I think once upon a time to test if something
was
actually
real
gold, you could, because gold is just, maybe, I don't know. Bugs Bunny always did it, so it's good enough For bugs, it's good enough for me.
I made a mental note to ask you that, Omine, because I'm like, why do they always do that? It's so weird.
When I won all of my Olympic gold medals, I never did that, Melissa, so I really can't answer. For me, the big stories of the games were Michael Phelps and Usain Bolt's continued dominance, Katie Ledecky's next step towards cementing her legacy, and I think also the general uneasiness around the games, whether it was more drama at the competition or more televised drama like the Ryan LaClose shadow boxing in front of Phelps shots from the ready room, or the whole Ryan Lochte debacle, having the games played in the shadows of the favelas in Rio. There's so many different sort of undertones to this. I don't think this was, like, say, the Sydney Games or the London Games, heralded as basically an almost unanimous success.
Yeah.
They were good, but there was a lot going on outside of the games.
It is incredible the extent to which people are still shaking their heads in disgust over Ryan Lochte's unraveled story. There are all sorts of implications to how that has played out. What an embarrassment and an otherwise shining moment for the U.S.
Well, and listen, I think not only did Lochte kind of play the part of ugly American, but also I think you have a tremendously over-aggressive response by Brazil trying to pull passports and everything else. Sometimes in a story, there's not the right and the wrong. It's two different wrongs, and I think that's kind of what we had there. Lochte's wrong, more egregious than the Brazilian police, but it's just an ugly situation all around.
Yeah. Meanwhile, though, let's talk about the Armada and the Suns, because soccer and baseball fans need to be following our local teams because they are off to, well, the Suns are almost done, but the Armada are on a good streak.
Yeah, they've now gone four matches unbeaten after a pair of draws last week, 1-1 on Wednesday night against Fort Lauderdale and a 0-0 in 97-degree heat against Minnesota. Oh. That was a game that was originally...
In Minnesota?
No, against Minnesota here. It was originally going to be a 7 o'clock kickoff, but when the Jaguars' preseason schedule came out, it forced the game to be moved, and the only option because of scheduling really was to move it up to 2:30, and boy, hottest game in Armada history, and afterwards the guys were just absolutely soaking. They're off this week, then three straight road matches before coming back home on September the 24th to take on Rio OKC. And for the Suns, you mentioned, just one more homestand left in the season after this one, which starts tonight at the baseball grounds.
Go see some baseball before the season wraps up and follow Cole on Twitter at Cole Pepper for all your sports news and notes. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Melissa.
That's our show. Our producer is Kevin Mershart. Michelle Corum is running the board. The show theme composed and performed by the Jacksonville Symphony's Pyotr Chevchik. Diane Reams up next with a look at why the U.S. is phasing out the use of private prisons for federal inmates. I'm Melissa Ross, and you're listening to First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT-FM Jacksonville, your community, your world. We'll be right back here again at 9 a.m. tomorrow. Have a great day.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.